another pleased to have our next talk. And the title is Defining Topological Vertex.
No.
Defining Topological Strings, Quantum Geometry,
and Integrable Systems. Great. Okay, so thanks to the organizers for inviting me to speak. It's my first time to Santa Barbara. I'm happy to be here. So as already said, the title will be Defined Topological Strings, Quantum Geometry, and Integrable Systems. So as requested, this talk will be mainly based on my recent work. I did a couple of works a couple of months ago. The preprint is 1105-0630. And this was done in collaboration with Mina Aganagic, Miranda Sheng, Robert Eckworth, and Kumbun Waffer. And also I should say that there's many related work in the literature. Mainly in the context of the 2D, 4D correspondence. However, I think we have the most unified picture of the things I'm going to talk about. So the outline will be as follows. So my direction will be basically going from here to where? This direction, so I start with basically defining what I mean under defined topological strings. So definition. And in particular, the epsilon 2 to 0 limit valve. So this is mainly old stuff, except, this you can find in the old literature, except this limit. It hasn't been discussed explicitly, but it's more or less trivial. So I will keep this more or less brief. And the second part, I personally consider as one of the main results of our paper, is the quantum geometry part. So what I mean under quantum geometry will become clear later. I will try to make it more in a physical, intuitive way. But one can also rephrase this more in like sophisticated mathematical language, but I won't do it here. Okay, and the main result of this section is actually that the epsilon 2 to 0 limit is particularly simple. So and then the third point, I guess this is the point where our 4N listeners are mostly interested in. It's a connection to integrable systems or quantum integrable systems. So I see this kind of result actually as some kind of bonus of this discussion or as some kind of corollary. And in particular, I think one doesn't even need at all this big framework of topological strings or refined topological strings to arrive at this result. One can basically directly work on the level of Zweig-Witten geometry. But this one is just like a bonus or corollary of just side command. It's not so important. Okay. It's not important. I just say this is like a bonus result of this discussion. But I said differently. I'm personally not so much interested in this direction. So I just delete this kind of thing. Everything's fine.
Learn before reading, right?
Yes. Okay. So let's start. Okay. So we are in the definition. So definition. Refined topological strings. the reason why I'm saying definition is because I would love to have some kind of worksheet description of this object. I'm saying definition because I have to define in some way what I mean. Because I mean, at the moment we don't have any kind of worksheet description of this kind of affine topological strings, so we have to do some kind of trick on how to define things. And that goes over M theory based definition. Yes, but you see, there are also several proposals on the market, and at the moment it's not really, I mean, I think it's not settled yet what is really the right proposal. Uguri, there's a proposal, and also Antoniadis has some kind of proposal, so there are many different kind of things on the market, and I'm not in the position to judge, I mean, which is the right thing. And
well, the paper came out after your paper.
Yes, but I mean, the talk is now after the paper come out, but I'm just saying this one is on solid ground, and we can take it as a working definition of things. Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping for that there's a worksheet description, but at the moment I'm not sure. I mean, what it is actually, or which one is. It's Ruby, but I don't know. Okay, so we take M3 as usual on a top mat times a circle, and then times some Calabi-Yau manifold. So this one is actually not trivially twisted. As a realization of the omega background, and X is taken to be a local Calabi-Yau threefold. Local is important to make the definition consistent. We basically define a partition function, BPS. As a trace over the Hilbert space of M2 planes.
What
a local one is? You can think about it like a fourfold with an anticanonical bundle on top.
Could it be a local curve as well?
It can also be a local curve, like P1 with some, like conifold P1 times O1 minus O1. Okay, so we define the partition function via a trace over the Hilbert space of M2 planes. Yes. Oh, I know the question because I think they already asked me the same question.
Right? Okay. Okay, what is it? What is X?
Well, X is a.
What are the conditions for X?
Local Calabi-Yau threefold.
Local Calabi-Yau threefold.
The most important condition is that it's local. This is the important condition.
Any local Calabi-Yau threefold.
No, not precisely. I mean, it should be rigid. Sorry, it should be rigid. So what you can't take, in this definition, what you can't take, for example, some arbitrary bundle over, P minus 2 times O P over P1. Such games only work for P equals plus 1, minus 1 and P equals 0. This you can take. Must be rigid curve. It's the only condition I impose on the local Calabi-Yau
threefold. They want to know whether they can take any singularity fibered over P1.
Eight singularity fibered over P1?
Yes.
If it is rigid, you can take it.
If it's rigid, you can take it over P1. Any other questions?
Okay. I think this will take much more time. But it's a Russian style seminar, so I can open and we lock the doors and everything is fine.
Is that a question or a statement?
Okay, let me talk. Okay, so.
Both.
Okay, so we defined an index. Yes, when we can complain. If I'm at least written down the index. D times T. So this is like the index of spinning M2 brains. The spin in SO4. Right, so this is like the spin part, and this is like the orbital angular momentum part. Okay, basically I'm defining. Maybe I'm just defining this partition function, and one can show that this is actually well defined. Oops. So if I have, okay, if I have this definition, one can actually evaluate this trace, and this is just kind of. Sorry, I forgot. This D is on, so we are spinning on two brains, I mean, between Kähler classes in H to X of Z. Okay. Some of the spins, over the Z component. To infinity. I mean, the degeneracies. Right. So here with this one I just mean the quantum number. So n just defined as from this one can explicitly show if one just evaluates this trace.
What is n?
Ah, this is a degeneracy of states. So it's like degeneracy. So if you get something like if you take epsilon 1 equals minus epsilon 2, these are just these Kuparova-Waffer numbers. Sorry for my bad script.
Basically, I should make sure
to
the audience that this is my question and not their question.
Okay. Basically, this is my definition, so I'm taking ZBPS is an object I define as mine.
So there are these partition functions in the subscript, so subscript, how does that
work? So the epsilons are basically the twist you're doing in this geometry. So you have like you have a vibration of your top nut over the S1. So if you go once around the S1, so if you go at theta plus 2pi, what you do is you twist the top nut, so you change the complex structure by this omega rotation. So Z1 goes over Z1. Z is the complex structure of this top nut. Sorry, the coordinate on the top nut. So you go over E epsilon 1, Z1, and Z2. So E epsilon 2, Z2.
Yes, yeah, but how does it go into the formula? Because it's in the subscript. You have quantum numbers subscript.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I mean, it goes like, let's say lambda. Okay, so this is my definition. So Z BPS, epsilon 1, epsilon 2, depending on my local cardio X, which is rigid. This is my definition of my refined topological string energy partition function. similarly, if you take this kind of definition, we can now do some games, or can play some games with a parameterization. And what one usually does, is, or which is the most convenient parameterization of these epsilons, is really to choose epsilon 1, like square root of beta gs, and epsilon 2 minus 1 over square root of beta gs. And then one then just does expansion of epsilon, of the free energy in terms of gs. So something f of beta gs is just something like f of g, g equals 0 to infinity of beta and gs to dg minus 2. So I should stress that now in this kind of expansion, beta is a finite parameter. Finite parameter. So what one could also do is that, well, let me first say that this is the thing I'm defining. I'm defining as defined topological string amplitude. Okay, so up to now only definitions. So everything is fine. Everything is defined.
Beta is finite what?
It's a finite parameter.
Finite.
So you can, I mean, it's, I will come back to this now. I mean, you could also say, okay, I have my f. I mean, this is also what some other people are doing. You can take this f, epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and I say, okay, now I'm expanding in both parameters. So I'm getting like an expansion, call it n1, n2, then f, n1, n2, epsilon 1. So what do people do? Let me see. Epsilon 1, epsilon 2, n1 minus 1, and epsilon 1 plus epsilon 2, 2, n2. And then we just say, okay, now I'm defining the parameters differently, so epsilon 1 times epsilon 2 is like gs squared, and what is the other kind of, and h bar, something like epsilon 1 plus epsilon 2 equals gs beta minus. But I mean, these two definitions are just related via resummation. So it's just, I mean, f g of beta is just sum e b to b f. So it's just a finite resummation. And here, I mean just the partitions. These are just the partitions of length 2. Partitions 2 of G. So it's just a finite resummation. Otherwise, the two, I mean, expansions are the same. And then you can, and as a media caller, for example, I and Johannes had last year, we showed that if you have like a non-holomorphic completion of this object, it fulfills somehow holomorphic anomaly equations, the usual ones, holomorphic anomaly. And on the same, well, a bit later, Albrecht Klemm and Nichen Huang wrote down some holomorphic anomaly equations for this SAB. But I mean, you can immediately see, I mean, due to this formula, that it's the same. It's just the aware holomorphic anomaly equation is just the reformation of the usual holomorphic anomaly equation. Maybe as a side remark. Okay. So the main point, what people showed, it's like Iqbal, I think even before Hollywood, and Ewell, and also Iqbal. But what's maybe Nikita, also I think Nikita knew it from the start, I mean here's also something in this paper, but if you then start with ZBPS, epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and takes a 4D effective field theory limit. It reduces to the usual gauge theory partition function in the omega background. So let me call it Z neck epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. Okay, so much to the definitions.
What does D
you take, make a dimensional reduction, so you go to the 4D effective theory. If you have, okay, if you take this, well, this is on define of the local color VR, and if it's like a geometric engineering kind of geometry it constructs, or in the Lloyd effective energy limit, it, I mean, reduced to some gauge theory.
But in terms of parameter you defined, do you take some limit for the parameters you defined over there, like in the 5D?
Yeah, sorry. I mean, you have to take, I mean, this 4D limit is like a limit of you take specific point in modelized space. You have, like, if you have, like, the P1 times P1, with anti-canonical bundle over it, what you do is you have two moduli, like T1 and T2, so you make them one small and one big, and then you can show that this reduces to SU2 gauge theory.
But these partition functions are the same, that's my question.
Yeah. I mean, this one, I mean, in the 4D limit, it reduces to this one.
But yes. Is that also coming up where the radius of something goes to infinity or something? Usually...
Yes. I mean, it's a, I mean, you have to take also, when this is like a 5D, and it's like the 4D limit. Yeah, it's like, I mean, this constructs like a 5D gauge theory, and you can take the 4D limit of the gauge theory playing with the circle. Okay, so this was the definition. So, I mean, the main interest of this recent, well, I don't know, of the work of Nikolov and Shetashvili is this epsilon 2 to 0 limit. Because as I showed, this relates to this quantum integrable systems. And then, I mean, if you have like this kind of MCU definition, you can also take directly this kind of limit. So you just let me define omega of h bar as the limit of epsilon 2 to 0 of s and h bar and epsilon 2. And then you can easily show, like, if you take this formula and you take the limit, you see that this is just the sum over the... Ah, sorry, yeah, I have to regularize the epsilon 2, thank you. You have to sum over the total spin, JD to 0 to infinity, then equals 1 Kn D JD degeneracies are just J1, we call it J1 and J2. Again, the partitions of JD, length 2, and DJ1, J2. So that's what you just, well, you take the limit and then you resum, and then you see that you're counting the degeneracies of total spin JD equals J1 plus J2. So can you repeat?
What do you actually
do? Well, you, what I do to it, I mean, multiplying the Lewis function of epsilon 2 to regularize, and then I'm taking the limit epsilon 2 to 0. This. Yes. I mean, this you. I mean, the construct is that you have like one brain on the P1, and another brain on the P1, other P1, and you're making one big. Yeah.
Instead of telling you that one particular example.
Conceptually, you're going to a specific point in modelized space. I mean, they are sending basic GS to 0, so you're decoupling the string modes, and also, yeah.
Right. So you want to take GS to 0?
Yeah.
And T goes to something.
I mean, this is stupid. I mean, you have to... I mean, to choose the moduli appropriately to get to the right point. And so I don't remember all the details of this geometric construction.
Yeah. Somewhere, like, we take yeah. T to 0 and T goes to something that you're not quite telling us, which is
yeah.
the operational.
So I don't remember all the...
So
you have less T's, you have less...
Down there,
yeah.
Not the same.
No, no, here, I mean, you have less T's here, on this side, yeah, you have less T's. Okay. Okay. So this is the thing, what is it, it's a Yang-Yang, or what they call Yang-Yang function. And then in this other parametrization, it just looks like you have to play a bit around with this one. So in this other parametrization, it's just lim beta goes to 0, beta to n of f n f beta. If you do the expansion h bar of omega.
This is just a trivial change of
variables. Yes, it's just a trivial change of variables. Yeah, and the only reason why you have this beta to power n is because you have to pick out here properly some kind of right terms.
Slightly naive question, is that up to this stage, right? Is it possible to do everything just purely in gauge theory? I started with the five-dimensional gauge theory, like one you can have people asked before, and they just do a dimensional reduction. And
you can do everything in pure gauge theory if you want. I mean, I just...
Because they are mapped, they are dictionary already, right, in that one topological string.
Yeah. I mean, this is just an old, this is just a definition of things.
Right, so what's the kind of motivation so far, like trying to take the whole gauge theory picture in this topological?
Because I want to have a gym, I want to translate this one to the next section where I'm going now. I want to basically take the mirror of the, or the proposed mirror. You see, if you take this kind of MC picture, you can go down to type 2A, or you could now go down to type 2A on X, then you could ask what is the mirror of this kind of thing. And this is the thing I want to discuss in the next section. This is the motivation why I'm going in this direction.
Yeah, I'm also confused with something. If TS is going to 0, then epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 is going to 0. Not only are the T's different.
Well, I mean, you have here, like, it's a limit. I mean, you don't set it to 0, you just take the limit. So you have, like, an expansion in GS. Like, you're computing gravitational corrections to your gauge theory.
There's a function,
yeah.
GPS with epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, and Zeno-Grasso with epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. I'm still trying to figure out exactly what you're doing with the GPS. GPS gets Zeno-Grasso. So I understand that you're taking some of the
parameters
to special
values, or I think what you want to say is you're shrinking some
cycles.
Mm-hmm. And I think
you're also taking GS to
there. Yeah. Is
there a GS on the right-hand side?
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, GS is, I see what you mean, because you're saying this one is, this is GS complete. I mean, in this side, you don't necessarily have to take this GS expansion. There's the way I said it, if I'm taking here, like, GS to zero limit, then I automatically end up here in the expanded form.
Right.
Yeah?
When you say GS to zero, does that mean you're writing the small GS asymptotics, or are you actually taking a limit? I'm really not sure.
Peter has a message for you, Greg. He says, tell Greg that ZBPS is a 5D partition function compared to 5D instrument.
Well,
we think.
It defines it. Yeah, it defines ZPPS. But I mean, I'm trying to understand what's the relationship between ZPPS and
Zeno-Grasso. Okay, then. I don't recall it.
About the physics. What,
yeah.
You have functions of epsilon 1, epsilon 2, and T.
Yeah.
What do you do to it to get Zeno-Grasso? You actually did something.
Yeah.
So you set some T's to 0.
I mean, I'm going to, okay, let me just say to go on. I mean, I'm going to a specific point in modelized space, and then one can show that this reduces to that mix of.
So epsilon 1, epsilon 2 on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side,
yeah,
the same.
It should be the same.
Scaling epsilons or something like that, I was wondering.
It can be that there's a scaling involved. Sorry, I don't remember the details. Sorry, yeah?
Yeah, it's scaling involved. On the right-hand side is a function of the ratio of epsilon 1 and epsilon 2.
Yeah, that sounds
well. Yeah, so I don't remember the details. I'm just saying, I mean this is well said. One can do this kind of thing. I just don't remember.
There's a uniform scaling of epsilons and 8.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what they think.
Okay, I think that sounds important.
Okay. Sorry, but I don't remember all details of that.
All dimensions are the dimension of mass.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So this was a different... So this was the definition. Now comes the new things. Classical V-model geometry. This is just, in the end one can see that this is completely encoded in a curve. X, P is to 0 with some holomorphic or reduced holomorphic 1 form. Via special geometry. Geometry with encodes the complete radar. This is in the whole curve. The reduced neural curve, yes. UV plus H? Ah, okay. Okay, the neural curve is UV plus HXT. The zero is a complete mirror curve. And the holomorphic one form, I mean, you can see that you can reduce this into this kind of thing. I just want to keep it brief, I'm running out of time. But anyway, so you can see that it's all encoded in one curve, and the three levels are just usual periods. Undeformed and undefined without anything. So what we now consider is a B-brain, a probe, a brain probe. Consider a brain probe. So that's just a point, so localize at a point. Show, this is all a famous result, it's a classical partition function, a brain wave function, just half a Jacobi map, so it's lambda p over h bar, so I'm just writing here h bar instead of ps.
Daniel,
this
question from our friends on the East Coast.
Yeah.
They say, why don't you take a general hypersurface non-compact Gaudian given by the equation f of u p x equals 0 instead of u plus h equals 0. It has a real function of 1.
Well, the reason why I want this kind of geometry is because for this kind of geometry So usually you have this kind of geometry, and then you have like periods which are your three cycles. And in this kind of geometry, because the holomorphic one form is like the form du u times dp dx, you can reduce everything to a one form and to a usual. So use the magic this kind of geometries. I don't know, maybe there are more general ones, but you can play the same trick. I just don't know. But this is for me the minor problem. This is why I think I want really a one-dimensional problem. And as you can see, I mean this one, I mean in the end, because it's one-dimensional, you can assert this one to like a Hamiltonian for partial and complex, with a complex phase space. Okay. Okay, so this is a wave function. So, and you can already see, I mean, if you're setting like a ds equals you can see that I mean, this is like a Hamilton, classical Hamilton-Jacobi equation. Particles are two complex dimensional phase space.
So is this psi a section of a line bundle or something like that of the camera model?
I mean, I think so, but I'm not completely sure. I mean, it's could be. Like a space-time filling brain, which is localized on a frame rate. Space, so it feels completely space-time. Well, I mean, from the topological standpoint.
This is a B-model thing, right? So.
In a point of its internal space, and it feels like part of the sun.
It is possible to actually talk about the brain partition function if you said earlier that you're not using a worldship description of verified topological system.
This comes from the matrix model. That's the next step. I mean, I will construct, I mean, for certain geometries, like the matrix model dual, and there's, I mean, it's very fine. You can just take the one-point function, so you insert, basically, in your matrix model, you calculate the one-point function of a brain insertion, and this is your partition function.
So you're going to interpret sigma as the spectral curve of some
yes.
matrix model. Is that matrix model uniquely determined by the spectral curve?
For certain class of geometries, I will consider, I would guess so. I'm only considering this kind of diagonal Hoffman geometries, so where we have just a mathematics model with a polynomial.
It's a wave function.
Just cut it in. Qualitative.
Qualitative.
Safety, maybe it shouldn't be recorded, I never know. Maybe in some years something will blame me on this kind of things. Okay, so anyway, so you can make this more concrete if you consider, I mean, if you consider matrix models with like a polynomial potential, we call it, it doesn't matter the details. So you can consider like the Dijkstra buffer geometries and you can construct a, or this is like dual to a matrix model. And then you can just study the brain insertion of your matrix model. This is a matrix model correlate and you insert the brain. And then you can basically derive for the brain insertion, you can derive a differential equation which just comes from the word identities of the invariance of the matrix model and the reproduction of the eigenvalues.
So Daniel, why is the WKB approximation okay? I mean, are you taking, what's the expansion? Like, what's the approximation?
At the moment, I don't do it. I mean, at the moment, I'm just saying this looks qualitatively like a WKB approximation. At the moment, I don't do it. I'm just saying it looks qualitatively like it.
Can you define the sign of what the sign is?
Yeah, but how do I understand it's a wave function or something?
At the moment, I'm just saying, like, see, it looks qualitatively like if I quantize with some Hamiltonian, it looks like I'm doing a WKB approximation. Later on, I will do it
how
more.
How do you compute the subleading terms?
Mm-hmm. This will I do later. I mean, I did the computation actually for a really non-trivial geometry.
In this computation, you must be computing the expansion of something. What is the something?
Yeah, I will come to this. And then you can ask me again, and then you can.
You just understand there's some exponential or something right now. I never mind WKB or like. No.
Okay. I'm just saying this looks qualitative. You have a Hamiltonian, and if you do like a has a wave function solution, it looks like this one, the leading term. That's all I'm saying. Okay, anyway, so if you calculate this correlator in the matrix model, what you're getting out is something like a Schrödinger-like equation. I mean, this depends on, I mean, you can choose in this kind of brain ansatz, you can choose different kind of values for the coupling constant. This is what I mean here with the alpha. And for how you choose the coupling constant, you're getting a different kind of equation out with different epsilons here. So this is what you get out of the matrix model calculation. And this is,
what is alpha?
Epsilon is just the usual epsilon parameters I introduced before. So epsilon alpha and epsilon 1 or 2. It depends on what kind of coupling constant you choose for the brain insertion. So you're getting your different epsilons.
So this is after taking epsilon 2
and 0? No. This is completely general. I mean, this is...
Epsilon alpha could have been epsilon 2?
It can be epsilon 1 or epsilon 2. Yes, I mean, if it...
I don't know what any of these symbols mean. What's B of X?
It can be epsilon 1 or epsilon 2. Depends on how you choose.
Oh, okay. So alpha is epsilon 1 or epsilon
2? No, alpha. So you have epsilon alpha, and alpha is 1 or 2.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, good. Okay, so what's B of X and what's B?
I have to write it a bit more in a qualitative fashion because I don't want to introduce a complete matrix model machinery. So V is like, it includes
the potential from the matrix model.
It includes part of it, yeah. It's not only, it's a bit more. It's just it's just a function of X.
Are they relating to HXP in some way?
So what?
Are the B related to the Hamiltonian you wrote down there?
Yes, it is related. I mean, for this kind of matrix models, you see, the Hamiltonian is just, the potential. Let me write the potential. It's like the derivative of the potential, if I remember correctly, squared plus some function f of x. And this is like the Hamiltonian for this kind of geometries I'm considering in this matrix model language.
So you
It's just a loop equation?
It comes only out from the loop equations. Yeah. I mean, it's actually the derivation is, I mean, it's a bit lengthy, but it's not really something, I mean, involved or difficult or whatever. I mean, it's really, the calculation is straightforward.
And what's the last term? Is D?
D, which I'm coming now to, is like a D is a differential operator. It's a differential operator. This is the important thing, which involves something I call times. And the times are like the non-renormalizable modal I, so it's like the coupling constants. Involves the coupling constants of the matrix model potential. So like you have your potential, you can call it W of X, and something like sum over Tn Xn. And this includes derivatives of Tn, so it's like a function, it's a function of d, d, Tn. Like a, well, it's a bit more complicated differential operator, but it's just a linear combination of this kind of derivatives of first order. So as you see, if I'm taking now this kind of equation, the epsilon, or basically the gs, to zero limit, which is the same as epsilon 2 to 0, this kind of term drops out. So this equation, what you get out of the matrix model, is more general. This is like the complete. So you determine the one-point function for the brain completely, independently of this epsilon. I mean, for both epsilon 1 and epsilon
2. You did some sort of rescaling, right? Epsilon 1, 2, I remember in previous blackboard, it was actually, it was epsilon 1 and 2 proportional to GS.
Yes.
And but if you take GS to 0, naively it goes to, both go to 0, right? Epsilon 1 into both.
No, no, no. I mean,
so you do some scaling. You do some double scaling.
Right? I mean, I'm defining
beta to 0 or something.
If I'm sending this one, I'm sending beta to 0.
Okay, good.
And this is beta to 0. It's the same. If I take epsilon to 0, I mean, it's the same as, then how you define things. So you can define beta epsilon 1 over epsilon 2. Okay, you can also define it some other way. I mean, you can send like this one, you send it to 0, then beta goes to 0. You can also send beta to infinity if you want. It's all the same. So anyway, in this specific Nikolov-Strauss-Schwede limit, it becomes easy because this...
Can you settle two brains?
Sorry?
I mean, to begin, there are two. There is a symmetry that exchanges epsilon 1 and epsilon 2.
No, the symmetry is broken. As soon as there's a brain in the game, the symmetry is broken, because you only see two dimensions.
There's one brain, I think it's correct, that there's a D3 brain that's wrapped on a curve, and the Calabi-Yau, and it wraps a two-dimensional subspace of the four-dimensional space, or something like this, and that's the fixed plane under one under these rotations, okay? Mm-hmm. So that's why it has, that's why the brain carries an alpha label, labeling those two planes in alpha, right? Mm-hmm.
Why is there an X then? I thought it was a point on the spectrum.
Well, because the brain, okay, the brain is, because the brain wraps a reducible fiber of this conic vibration over this curve.
Ah.
And these fibers are reducible precisely for a point on the spectral curve. So the X labels the brain, and then you have, I suppose you have to choose between U and V also, which fiber you choose.
But that means that X is not arbitrary.
So X is arbitrary because X...
It's a point for you.
X is a point on the curve, and then you solve for P. Okay, I mean, it's just... at least... But the symmetry,
oh, I see. Okay.
But there's still a symmetry that exchanges those two brains, right? Epsilon 1 and epsilon 2 get exchanged.
Yes, but at the same time,
and at the same time you exchange those two types of brains. Yeah, but now the matrix model, that you didn't talk about the matrix model, but the matrix model has, is this one of these beta deformed matrix
models? It's somewhere, yeah, it's a beta one, deformed one.
But, so if you fix beta for the matrix model, and G-string for the matrix model. Each of these matrix models should have two brains.
It has, yeah. I mean, that's the reason why you have...
These two brains defined for one matrix model. And then there is a symmetry, I mean, you know, that exchanges beta to one over beta, and exchanges the two types of brains.
I mean, the brain insertion is something like a determinant of x minus... So if you have different kind of brain insertions you can do, and exactly two brain insertions you can do with some kind of power here, depending on, we call it M of beta. I don't remember the function here. But you have exactly two kind of things you can do so that you get a nice loop equation out and this kind of differential equation.
That was helpful. So does that mean he's looking at some surface defect?
He is also, yes. And there are two different types of surface defects.
Okay, so anyways.
But this Schrödinger-like equation is the same for the two brains? I mean, how does this
is alpha. It's alpha parameterized. Basically, what kind of...
Is it obvious to see why under this exchange of alpha 1 and alpha 2, epsilon 1 and epsilon 2, that they both obey the same potential, Vx, over there?
It can be that this is alpha dependent.
So B depends on beta?
I think there's one... No, it doesn't depend on beta, I think.
So why?
No, sorry, it must be. Because it's not, it shouldn't be, I mean, the equation shouldn't be symmetric, so there should be some alpha dependence here. Anyway, I mean, so you have these two kind of brains, and you're getting for two kind of Schrödinger equations out of, depending on how you choose the brain insertion. But anyway, what I want to take out of this kind of thing, I want to take this epsilon 2 to 0 limit. So I want to kill all this time dependence, so that I'm just getting the usual Hamiltonian for my wave function. So I'm getting like a Hamiltonian, for the wave function out.
Did you really mean the expectation by the psi equal to the differential operator asking the expectation by the psi alpha?
It means that it satisfies the equation, right? Yeah. You should erase the psi because it looks like there is a quality between
the two. You start with a matrix model, you start with an arbitrary polynomial potential here, and then you're getting out basically the spectral curve.
Two different kinds of theories, two different classes of theories. So the first you are looking at the, A model, Torrey-Caraviello kind of stuff, right?
Yes.
And then, the matrix.
When I'm saying
that will be like channel Simons.
No. I'm going to the dual B model. I have the B model, I have this kind of classical geometry. And for certain kind of geometries, there's a matrix model dual.
Yeah.
Where this kind of Hamiltonian has qualitatively this form. And you have a matrix model dual. And you can play all the games. I played here. And you can just derive like a Schrödinger equation for the one part insertion.
But for the mirror,
you can't do that. You can't do that.
You cannot.
I mean, because the reason why I cannot, maybe if I can find something, but you see, I mean, here I'm using really the beta ensemble. This gives me like my refinement. Yeah. But I mean, the beta ensemble is only valid for really limited classes of examples.
So, Wx, you define the potential.
No. I mean, this is, sorry, maybe I did it too. I mean, this is not this. I mean, this W is not this one. It's a bit different, but this one is inside of this one.
So, Daniel, the bottom line is you have a second order operator, right?
Yes.
So, you have a second order differential operator.
Yes.
You have a second order differential equation. There's two linear
independent solutions. Yes.
And then there's monodrone.
And
it's
what?
Monodrone.
Yes.
Do
yes.
Monodrone, right?
Yes.
So then you talk about WGB approximation.
Yes.
And a priori there are two different limits.
Mm-hmm.
One would be something like e to the minus s over h, the other one e to the s over h.
Yeah.
But when you have monodrone, you're going to get mixed up, right?
Yeah.
And then you're going to have all kinds of Stokes phenomena and things like
yes,
that.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So then how can you
pin down one of them.
I mean, I'm... Okay, maybe I should say it a different way. I mean, here, this is one possible solution. I mean, you don't know if it's really this solution, this is the correct one, and you cannot have linear combination, as you said.
But the point is, it's changing, because, you know, since there's one of them, there isn't a particular, there isn't a distinguished element.
Yeah, I'm just saying you can let someone, you can choose one if you want.
You can choose one?
You just take one, yeah. Just take one at the moment, and...
But locally, you can choose, right? I mean, but how, like, is there a prescription? How do you choose? Whatever you choose,
one solution and asymptotic solution.
And even if you choose it, once you move over your point, then you're going to discover how it's going to be a different solution. So,
yeah.
Or it's going to have a different behavior.
Yeah. Okay, let me come back to this in a minute, because I just tell you what I'm doing now with this kind of. So I have this kind of equation, and I'm just making, I make just a naive ansatz. So I'm just taking this kind of equation and I'm making a naive ansatz. I'm taking really a naive ansatz. I'm saying my psi, as I wrote down well, h bar x xds. So I can run in principle, I mean I can take make this ansatz, like WKB ansatz, and I solve for ds. Ds. So I'm getting like an expansion of ds in h bar. With something like I could call like a quantum differential locally, if you want so. Differential. And then you could take this kind of thing to define, I mean, you define like periods. Ds. So you might say, okay, this is not well defined because, I mean, changes from point to point. What I'm just now observing is if I'm taking this definition and using the usual special geometry relation that pb equals d f0 nach pa, I actually see if I'm taking, or if I'm calculating in this naive fashion, calculating pc, pa and pb, so I'm calculating pa of h bar and pb from h bar, what I'm getting out is exactly my w of h bar. Here is naive ansatz.
It's a
partition, but if you take the matrix model, you calculate the partition function of the matrix model, it takes the epsilon 2 to 0 limit of this kind of thing, you're getting the free energy, and this you can reproduce in this naive fashion.
What is that one again?
Well, you take your Z matrix model, yeah, for epsilon 2 goes to 0. So you take the free energy, so like a log F. This is W. Then you reproduce exactly in this fashion the same thing.
H bar equals epsilon 1 in this case?
Yeah. I mean, this is, I mean, you might be surprised, but I mean, the calculation is, I mean, it's in solid ground. I mean, if you just make this naive ansatz and you do the monodomy games here, you're getting exactly out this kind of partition function.
What does it have to do with the first
equation?
Why did you introduce the
real term? Because, I mean, I need to...
He says that to make this statement.
Hmm?
He says he picks a particular solution of this equation. He doesn't specify which one, right?
I'm just saying this is an. I'm just taking this ansatz.
You say it's a solution or it's a model solution.
He says it's a WKB approximation of a solution. That's what, if I understand correctly. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm just parameterizing the solution.
A solution. Because
yeah.
There's two dimensions.
No, but there's a distinguished point in this classical spectrum or the other. In this geometry, a distinguished point in the classical spectrum. By the asymptotics, by asking, you have a two-dimensional space, but you have a branch point. You have one of those solutions will have some. Some type of behavior at this point in the h bar goes to zero limit. So,
is that the case?
I mean, I'm just. I mean, my choice is just. I'm parameterizing psi equals.
I mean, I just don't even follow the logic. I mean, why did we talk about the sign in order to make this statement about the building?
I mean, since the idea, okay, the idea from the brain point of view is I mean, I have my brain period, my open period is something like my holomorphic form lambda. It's like my brain super potential of X. So I'm just taking it around. So I'm probing.
So the idea is the motivates this function, this H bar expansion of ds from an asymptotic expansion. An asymptotic solution to the differential equation.
Yes.
And then define the
quantum
theory.
Yes. So I'm taking basically the brain and going around.
It's all just a solution. It's totally irrelevant. All you're doing is you're looking at the asymptotic expansion to the differential equation, which is not subject to Stokes phenomenon, to be monitored, or any of that. You just have a single formal solution.
Okay.
All you're doing is using that to motivate this ds.
Yeah.
And then you're making a definition.
Okay. So with this definition, if you want to call it so, okay. Yeah.
Okay, and the result is that if you do that,
when it matches.
Why did you do all this? Why didn't you just tell us that the log of the matrix model was W, which you defined before? Why did you go through all this WKB?
I mean, just an illustration, because I'm doing the same in the next step.
Illustration of what?
I mean, of what I'm doing. I mean, because I want to do the same with like local Clavier geometries. So I'm taking the local Clavier.
There's a logical gap. You could have said back here at the beginning of section 2, you could have said take log of Z matrix model, that defines W, and then we find, you haven't explained why, but we find that W is this epsilon 2 0 limit of Z Nekrasov. You could have said that.
Right? Why did you haven't said that yet?
I mean,
you haven't said that? Maybe I don't even understand.
No.
What is the statement? What is the statement about W?
I mean, okay, so you can, once you can calculate with W,
W is defined as the free energy of the matrix model?
Yes, you can,
okay,
so this one definition.
What about W?
So you can calculate with like a perturbative expansion of the matrix model, you can do everything is fine.
Okay.
The only thing I'm saying is, you can reproduce the same kind of thing if you're using this brain probe to go around the cycles, and you're getting this kind of quantum periods, and you're getting reproducing the same kind of free energy. That's the only thing I'm saying.
So how is F related to W? How is your quantum F related to W? Is the point that W is
this
the
is,
quantum pre-potential?
This is the quantum pre-potential, okay. Yes. This is a statement.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, you have like a quantum special geometry. So you can define the quantum special geometry in this kind of fashion.
You can define what can I can hear?
Like a quantum special geometry. You can define.
But
is this kind of fashion.
Can be a different definition of W with this quantum geometry? Or
I mean, in some sense, this
is
you can take this as
W is log of Z, right?
Yes.
But then you're calculating it in a different way. Is that?
I mean, see, this is a different kind. I mean, it's different. I mean,
this is what you want to calculate.
This is the thing. What I know, what should come out.
That's right. But then you're calculating it in some other way.
I'm calculating
in
different. Yes. You see, in this way, there's no, you don't use this kind of quantum geometry kind of ideas.
That's right. Yeah. So you want to reproduce this W by quantum, what you call.
Yeah. I just want to really take this quantum. And the reason how it is, I'm taking a brain in this kind of matrix model. I'm from the brain. I'm
so
learning.
This is Psi.
This is Psi. Yeah. And
from Psi is the solution of this second order differential equation.
Yes. So I can
do. Then you take some asymptotic expansion some way.
When I'm taking the solution and expand it asymptotically.
Particular solution.
Yeah. And when I'm taking this solution to probe basically the classical cycles, so the classical periods, and when I'm seeing that they're getting quantum corrections due to this WKB semi-classical approximation. Yeah. And then I'm seeing, okay, this still fulfills this kind of special geometry relation, that's a derivative of the period, it's this one, and then you're getting out exactly the W, if you just expand perturbatively, the thing without brain insertion.
And why, how do you know that this is
This is, I mean, this is just a calculational evidence. I mean, I don't have a theorem or a proof. I mean, it's just, I mean, you calculate, you can perturbatively expand the Maddox model, you see in the lot of corrections, and then you can match. I mean, you can calculate in this way, you're getting the same expansion, and you see that it matches. So it's not theorem or no proof, I mean, it's just a calculation or observation.
Okay. So here's one more question from our viewers. Let's say, what guarantees, it's about quantum periods, what guarantees the quantum D periods are derivative of some function of quantum A periods?
I mean, this is not an observation. I mean, this is not a theory. It's just an observation.
It's an observation.
It's an observation. I mean, see, I mean, this kind of things, I mean, hasn't, I mean, it's something, yeah, I mean, it's an observation. It's not really, really worked out. It's just model by model, it's shown.
It's a hypothesis or a conjecture.
Yeah, I mean, you observe it by model. You take the model, you calculate, so you try, I mean, you just apply this kind of special geometry relation to each order in H bar, and then in this way you calculate your W.
But this is, here you can see the formal power series expansion or analytical, some kind of analytic function.
That is the formal power series
expansion. Yeah. It's about formal power series expansion.
Yeah. So, I mean, this, you're getting just, you're getting
so
like...
you're getting W is a formal power series.
Yes, yes. It's, I mean, it's not the complete one in H, but it's just an series expansion. It's only a statement about the series expansion.
It's only what?
Only a statement about the expansion. So W,
expansion.
W is something like sum H bar N. W M. It's just a series expansion H bar. So H bar, I mean, small. It's only a statement on this level.
It's only a statement about this formal power series expansion. Okay.
So,
all right. So we are out of time. So I suggest that we stop on this and maybe there's some questions, a couple questions, and then we have a discussion, a formal discussion. And so perhaps we can continue. Perhaps we can have a continued discussion.
Sure.
Viewers in Stony Brook are also classic. So we have time maybe for one question.
So you have the Yang-Yang function?
Yes, they call Yang-Yang function.
The what?
I mean, they call it Yang-Yang function. I mean, for me, it's just, I mean, this is just the epsilon 2 limit of the partition function.
So under what assumptions is that, does it become the Yang-Yang function?
I mean, this will be the third part. This will be the third part of the talk. So it's, we can do this in the discussion chat. I'm not even finished with the second part.
So
in the afternoon, we can go on. If someone is interested, we can go on in the afternoon.
Yeah, basically similar to how do I see a spin chain of, say, given, do you have a specific example? Like, for example, we know the cyber-Witten curve associated with a spin chain, or in the paper by Nikita and Sanzong, they say, well, this is a Yang-Yang function or some spin chain. But do I see some spin chain coming out on this, all this
manipulation? I didn't really, say this is a spin chain or something. I just think there's a natural way, if you have a curve, there's a natural way to associate an integrable system to a curve. This is the only statement. I mean, and the non-trivial statement why you're getting this kind of, that you're getting basically, I mean, the non-trivial statement is that this W dA equals 2 pi I and Z. This you can motivate basically from this kind of topological string setup. Because this just comes out of the motor behavior of your brain.
But
so all the integrable systems, I mean, it comes out naturally, you can construct an integrable system just out of this curve. If you have a curve, you can associate an integrable system to the curve.
Yeah, but that will correspond to a certain given quantization scheme of the integrable.
Yes, you choose a normal ordering scheme. This is something you put in.
You'll explain it in the afternoon.
I can explain it in the afternoon.
Let's thank the speaker again.